You're listening to SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com. This is episode 25 for April 14th, 2008. This is another in our series of IT Basics for Physical Security Pros podcasts, and that means we have Principal Logic's Kevin Beaver on. We actually recorded this in advance because Kevin is over in Italy right now, over in Milan. He's keynoting the IDC Security Conference 2008. And he's giving a no-nonsense approach to security titled Real-World Security Problems That You Just Can't Afford to Overlook. So we can't wait to catch up with him once he gets back from that program. But in the meantime, we pre-recorded a program about password security. Talk about good passwords, bad passwords, how to manage and implement good password systems at a company, and, of course, where this intersects between the physical security community, the risk community, and the IT community. So without further ado, we're going to jump right into this discussion with Kevin about password security.
Well, we're back with Kevin Beaver on SIW Radio, our security podcast from SecurityInfoWatch.com, and our topic this week is the good old password. And a lot goes on with passwords. We can't avoid them in today's world. In fact, Kevin and I were just talking, we were following some news this week about Princeton researchers who had broken a disk or a laptop password by so-called icing the DRAM chip. Kevin, do you understand how that works?
Absolutely. From what I recall from the story, basically these researchers have found a way to freeze the whole disk encryption passphrase as it's stored in the dynamic RAM chip on the system, and then they can use some special software that they've written to actually extract it. And it's really interesting because this isn't hacking or bypassing the whole disk encryption software. This is actually manipulating the hardware, which is something that most of us don't have defenses against.
And as I understand it, I mean, this is a physical attack. I mean, when they say freezing, they really meant freezing, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
They're getting it down to, it was either a negative 50 Fahrenheit or Celsius, I suppose, Fahrenheit, and it was causing it to, the passphrase to be stored in the memory just long enough for them to be able to pull it right off the chip.
There goes security at the North Pole then, I guess.
Absolutely.
Well, let's get into passwords. One of the most common passwords, of course, is the network logon password, and obviously that's one that is very important. But let's talk about network logon passwords and all the passwords that people have to think about on their day-to-day basis.
Well, there's systems out there like web applications and databases. Even these physical security control systems that have web interfaces, smartphones and PDAs. A lot of people have these BlackBerries and these, Windows mobile-based smartphones, and they're carrying them around. But what happens when they leave them sitting at the barber shop or lose them at the gym or walking down the street or whatever? Based on my unscientific research, what I see is that most people don't have power on passwords for their devices in this manner. So anybody that comes across it's going to be able to get on it and do whatever they want to do. There's also the whole issue with laptop encryption, encrypting the whole disk or encrypting a partition or specific files on the disk. Even wireless network encryption keys, to secure the communication channel. So the list goes on and on.
And obviously, the passwords, if you compromise it, it's no good. I mean, it's supposed to be a secret code.
Absolutely.
That only the user knows. Unfortunately, it seems that people sometimes don't treat passwords as very secret. I was thinking this the other day, and we delayed recording this podcast about a week because I was fighting the flu, and while at the doctor, there on the wall was a sheet of paper in very bold, large font. It said the web address for their medical billing site and then the username and password. So just a kind of a classic case of how people can compromise their passwords. But what have you seen, Kevin? What are some horror stories?
Well, it's interesting how people take passwords for granted. You know, we have so many of them. With everything being electronic these days, we've got email both at home and at work. We've got banking and all these passwords to keep up with. So I think that's one of the underlying issues that we're having to fight. But some of the things that I'm seeing, and interestingly enough, that many passwords are still being left at their default settings. And, you know, within a matter of minutes, they're easily looked up on the Internet, and boom, the person doing the exploiting is in. We talked about this before on, I believe it was when we were talking about wireless security, when I was testing a network for security flaws and was able to get in through the wireless network and then found the data center control system for this organization and had this fancy little web interface that said, you know, welcome to our data center control system, please log in. And within a couple of minutes, I was able to get out on Google and look up the default username and password for that particular system and get in. So that's one of the big issues that I'm still seeing out there, and there's really no excuse for that. There are some other issues, like the, you know, passwords are easily guessed. They're either have no password or very weak passwords. You know, maybe they're taken via social engineering.
Right.
I actually had somebody to I don't know that it was intentional, but I was calling into a tech support line a couple of years back, and the guy was helping troubleshoot my internet connection, and he said, okay, so what's your username? And, you know, I gave that up just so he could look up the information. Then he said, what's your password? And what were the next words right out of my mouth? It was the password. Well, he didn't need that information, and I suspect that he may have been testing me to see how gullible I was going to be. And it was human nature, and I'm a security guy, and I still gave that information out.
Right.
You know, classic case of, you know, we're just too trusting as human beings. And I guess, you know, there's also the issue of network sniffing where, you know, people or anybody on the network loads up a network analyzer or a tool like KNENable onto the system, and they can see all the passwords just flowing across the wire, and there's nothing really that can be done about it. One particular case recently that comes to mind where I was able to compromise a laptop system. I was actually demonstrating this for a customer. I said, you know, give me one of your just a random laptop. And within about 2 minutes, I had booted it up from a bootable CD-ROM, cracked the Windows password, was able to log on to the system. And then once I got onto the system, I installed another tool that was able to go through and search for all the other passwords, including network passwords, local spreadsheet passwords, all sorts of stuff that's stored in the Windows registry. So really within a matter of about 5 minutes, I was able to own the laptop and potentially own the network, because I would have been able to get in remotely into their system had that been a real-world case. So it's pretty scary how quickly this kind of problem can happen.
And that's assuming they even have a decent password to begin with.
Exactly.
I'm on PC Magazine's website right now, and I'm looking at the 10 most common passwords. So let's start. Number 10 is simply the person's first name. Mm-hmm. Number 9 is link182. Number 8, and I think this goes because they tell you your password should have numbers and letters in it.
Right.
So number 8 is password 1.
Yep.
Yeah, really secure there. So number 7, a variation on that, I guess because MySpace is more popular than simple password, it's MySpace 1.
Uh-huh, there you go.
Number 6, monkey. Don't ask me why. I don't know why. Monkey. Number 5, let me in.
Yep.
Number 4, ABC123, a real winner there.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, number 3... QWERTY, of course, the top of the keyboard right there, right in a row. Number 2, 123456. And, Kevin, are you going to guess what the number 1 password is?
It's got to be password.
It is. So this is what we're up against.
we invest tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars into all these technical controls to lock down our environments, and then we have this kind of stuff that completely negates it all, you know?
Yeah, and we talked in one of our earlier programs about how people just aren't changing passwords from the defaults.
Right.
And why bother changing it from the default if you're going to pick one of these? So,
exactly.
If you're listening and you have one of these, we're not making fun of you. Well, actually, we probably are, but go ahead and change it.
We're here to help, actually.
We're here to help. Please change it, though. So, let's talk. I mean, let's talk about what makes a good password.
Well, I think the key thing to remember about secure passwords is that they need to be both easy to remember yet difficult to guess or difficult to crack. Ideally, wherever possible, we need to be using passphrases, not just a password like password or your first name or whatever. Use a phrase, a sentence. You know, put together something like the words or the sentence "spring is near." And you start out the sentence, or you spell the letter. You start out the sentence with spring with a dollar sign, and then maybe you separate the words with dashes, and then maybe you put a period at the end. You know, it's a pretty basic password, but it's going to be pretty darn difficult to guess. And you know, even something else like "I love American Idol." You know, and you put underscores in between the words, and you capitalize American and Idol, and you put an exclamation point at the end of it. That's a pretty darn good passphrase that's going to be difficult to crack and yet easy to remember, and that's the key. You want to try to keep these requirements to where you and your users do not have to write down their passwords on their, you know, the sticky notes and stick them to their monitors.
And this, the reason for this is, of course, there are lots of, you know, freely available hackers tools,
right,
that will simply run common words and number combinations into a potential, you know, password slot on a software or a hard drive or whatever it is that's been secured. So,
absolutely,
yeah. You know, one of the big challenges, of course, is it, even if you know how to make a good password and know that 123456 or monkey aren't good passwords, is how do you make sure your users, you know, follow through on passwords, that they pick a good password, that they don't do like my doctor's office did and tape it up on the wall, and,
right,
and that they don't put it on a sticky note and put it on their monitor.
Right.
You know, how do you make sure those policies are followed?
Well, I think this is one of the biggest misconceptions of security, is that as long as it's in the policy, then that means we're secure, right? That's absolutely incorrect. You've got to have, in many cases, and especially in this case, you've got to have technology to help enforce your policies. And when I say technology, typically, most operating systems, Windows in particular, has the ability to enforce strong passwords, so people cannot choose these lame passwords that anybody can guess. And, you know, you can also supplement strong passwords with other technologies like multi-factor authentication, like we're seeing with the FFIEC requirements for online banking. At the end of the day, you've got to use your operating system controls, your web application controls that your developers may have to build in, or that your vendor has already built in, or even your database controls. You've got to use that stuff, and it's there. People just aren't taking advantage of it.
One of the seems to be somewhat common, I don't know how common it is, you probably know better than I do, policies is to require a password change every so often. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, people ask me this question a lot. You know, "Hey, Kevin, I'm requiring my users to change their passwords every 30 days or every 90 days, whatever. Is that enough?" Well, I say that if you use strong passphrases, if you can force people to come up with these sentences that are easy to remember and difficult to crack, and you have no reason to suspect that their accounts have been compromised, I don't see any reason why you can't change them every 6 months or maybe once a year. You know, I'm all for security not getting in the way of doing business. So if you use those guidelines, you know, as long as they're strong, as long as they're not being shared, and as long as you don't suspect that they've been compromised, then don't change them that often at all.
And obviously, the sort of the converse of changing your passwords too often is that your users might be encouraged to write them down and put them on a sticky on the back of the monitor or on the back of the laptop or those kind of things that have to happen when you start changing passwords too often, I suppose.
Absolutely. Or they're just going to use their previous password and just increment the last number in the password by one or something. And that's something that any decent attacker is going to be able to pick up on.
Sure. Sure. And they'll see that pattern. It's interesting when you talk about policies. I was at a security conference, probably a couple of years ago, and a gentleman was there, and he was talking about how he had converged, of course, such a buzzword in our industry today, converged security from physical and network, and he was having security officers on their patrols, walking around the building, if they saw passwords written on sticky notes,
right,
on monitors, or other common sort of security issues, write a note on where they were and turn it in. He would pass it on to the IT counterparts, and they were able to enforce the policies because sometimes these we talked in the beginning of this program about a physical hack, and leaving passwords around obviously is a physical hack. What are some of the other problems you've seen with password policies?
Well, you mentioned the walking around. That's actually something that I saw in the late 80s when I was working for one of the big computer firms, that their security officers would walk around, and if they saw passwords on the monitors or if they saw that you had not logged off of your system, they would write you up, and you get two or three of those pink slips, and you're gone. And that's the thing. That's sort of the old school version of using technology to enforce passwords. It's using humans to enforce passwords, but it's the same concept. So I think one of the biggest problems that I'm seeing with passwords and password policies is that there's not enough of that stuff. We're all trusting that our users are doing the right things, that our all of our employees are good people because they passed a background check and they had good references, but that's not always the case. And the problem is that by and large, password policies are documented, but they're not being enforced. It's as simple as that. And really, an underlying problem is that many users don't have a clue what the organization's password policy really is, or they don't even, have never even heard of it, or maybe they signed off on something in the employee handbook when they first started. But conversely, there may be a situation where employees know that their password policies aren't being enforced. So what's the incentive? And this all goes back to management not being on the same page with IT and the physical security folks and actually leading by example and making sure that these policies are being enforced.
And obviously, we talk about just, policies not really existing sometimes. That seems to hold true a lot in the physical security world, where it's just equipment that's been sort of dumped in the guard shack or mm-hmm. or in the basement office where the security department and they it's a lot of times not even viewed as a part of IT's concern. So
right.
If IT isn't taking interest in your passwords of your physical security equipment, and you need to step up and do it yourself because, that equipment, holds your livelihood there. It's
absolutely
got the evidence, the data that your department runs on. So,
absolutely, and that goes back to not having or not enforcing a disposal policy for computer equipment. One of the other things I wanted to mention real quick, Jeff, is another issue that I see is that passwords are often often outside of the scope of security assessments and security audits. If anything, there's a checklist item. The auditor comes in and says, "Do you use passwords on X, Y, and Z systems?" And the answer is, of course, yes. And then nothing is actually being done to validate whether or not the passwords are actually being used and what vulnerabilities they may have related to them that may not show up in your run-of-the-mill checklist audit. So.
And, You know, one of the other things I think about that people need to concern themselves with is group passwords versus individual passwords.
Right.
And there's a lot of instances where people share the same username and password to log on to a system. And some of those are important, secure systems, and some maybe not so, and maybe it's really not an issue. Versus the other idea is to give everyone their own username and password and to tie their information directly to that. Are you seeing any trends on that? Are we moving towards more individualized log-on, or is it still pretty common?
Yeah, I think so. You mentioned the doctor's office. I still see a lot of shared passwords, shared user accounts in doctor's offices. I think it's an efficiency thing. They're doing it just so they can move more people in and out in a quicker, shorter period of time. The thing is, though, if you have group passwords and group accounts, there's no way to actually ensure accountability, and that's one of the underlying principles of good information security is accountability. And the only way that you're going to get that is to have individual user accounts so that everybody has their own ID to manage and can answer for their own actions when that account is used or when that account is compromised.
And it's, you know, I guess passwords are always going to be an issue. As long as we have users, they'll be an issue.
Yep, exactly.
So, we've covered a lot of it, and hopefully it's, you know, woken you up a little bit to some of the password issues. We're not saying anything new here. But maybe you haven't, you know, thought about it, or maybe some of these descriptions sound a little bit like what's happening at your firm. If so, consider it time to change. Maybe hire an outside consultant to offer some tips and evaluations, or do it yourself if you're so inclined. Kevin is principal of Principal Logic LLC. He's a CISSP certified independent information security expert, and you can check out his blog at securityonwheels.blogspot.com. So that covers it for passwords. We'll hit some more topics on our next episode. So thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Jeff.
Passwords. Can't live without them in a security sense that's hard to live with them. Well, I hope we've given you some good tips about managing password programs. And we'll be back in a couple weeks with Kevin on another topic, of course, that intersects between the IT world and the physical security world. In the meantime, of course, if you have any questions or you want to get in touch with us, email us at podcast@securityinfowatch.com. Again, that's podcast@securityinfowatch.com. You can send questions for Kevin or suggestions for the program. We'd be happy to hear them. We'll continue to cover the world of security with these regular radio program updates. So this concludes episode 25 of SIW Radio for SecurityInfoWatch.com. Thanks for tuning in.